Hello, welcome to the Thursday, November 14th, 2013 edition of the Sands and Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and I'm today recording from Jacksonville, Florida. I'm running into more and more organizations that more or less outlaw attachments. Now, what typically happens in this case, that attachments are either quarantined and delayed delivered or not delivered at all. The result of this is usually not that people stop sending attachments. Instead, they find other ways of sending them. After all, sometimes you need to send that PDF, that Word document, or that Excel spreadsheet. One way people start then sharing these documents is via cloud services like, for example, Google's Drive or others like Dropbox. And so it's no real surprise that the phishing tricks are following your users. Mark just wrote a diary about one such scam that we have cited the last couple days that entices users to log into Google Drive. Of course, they're not going to log into Google Drive. Instead, someone is just going to steal their password. And then to learn more about how your network is being attacked and who attacks it, Mark shared his experiences with his honeypot. And it sort of matches what we have seen essentially ever since DShield was started. What we tracked was what we call a survival time. Now, it's not necessarily a survival time, it's really just how frequently are you expecting to see any form of attack. And this time is pretty steady around 5 minutes, like I said, ever since we started DShield. And this sort of matches what Mark is seeing with his honeypot. For example, it took less than 2 minutes for him to be attacked on SSH, port 22. Port 2222, an frequently used sort of alternate port for SSH, well, it took 4 hours here. And other attacks like a cold fusion check about in 30 minutes. So your systems are attacked. They're attacked frequently. The real advantage I see of these honeypots is also to collect these indicators of compromise. If someone breaks into your SSH honeypot, and I've talked in the past about Kippo, one tool that implements these honeypots, then you, for example, see what kind of malware they're trying to install, what systems they're connecting to in order to retrieve this malware. So you can then use these indicators to look at your other systems, if they're connecting to these sites or if they are downloading this particular piece of malware. So this makes then a great little custom antivirus signature in case it's not already caught by existing antivirus. And then for the packet heads out there, I posted a quick challenge with an interesting packet. Honestly, no idea exactly what's going on here, but it looks like two extra bytes in the Ethernet header that then cause a TCP dump to misinterpret this packet. In some cases, interestingly, not in all cases. So I posted some of these example packets. Let me know if you are familiar with this behavior. I'm not using VLANs or such on this network, so don't think what would cause the Ethernet header to look like this. We also had a reader submit a similar traffic. His traffic was actually a little bit weirder than that, and maybe I'll post that later in the week. And then for completeness, yet another password hack, this time the Mac Rumors Forum. Again, email addresses, hashed passwords, and user IDs were compromised. In this case, it was yet another case of shared password. So this was not a case where there was a vulnerability in the forum. Instead, the attacker found the administrator's password based on leaked password data from another breach and then logged into the MacRumors forum and downloaded the personal information. So probably you should go over your password collection sometime next week and try to weed out some of these passwords that you use on multiple sites and try to change them, not waiting for any one of those sites to get compromised. And then we got a little bit more details regarding the S/MIME information disclosure vulnerability that was patched by Microsoft last Tuesday. Turned out that this is related to a pretty interesting feature. As you probably know, in SSL, the certificate that you use to sign a page or an email with S/MIME is not necessarily directly signed by a certificate authority. There may be some intermediate certificates. Now, sometimes these intermediate certificates are included with the certificate that you use to sign, but other times you may be referring to these certificates via an URL. Now, the trick here is that the recipient doesn't know whether or not the certificate is valid until it retrieves all of these intermediate certificates. And the attacker in this case may essentially specify arbitrary URLs. Now, part of this problem has been known for a while, and it could be used to detect if someone opens an email. You essentially just include one of these intermediate certificates that's hosted on a website that you control, and then you can see if someone accesses that certificate. The second part, that's a little bit more tricky, could be used to perform an internal port scan of a network. In this case, the attacker would specify alternate certificate URLs. One that points to an internal system with a certain port, one that points to an external system that the attacker controls, and so on. So always an external one under attacker control, then an internal one, then external one again. And by looking at the timing, how long it takes between accesses to these certificates, the attacker then may deduct how long it took for that internal request to time out, and with that, the attacker will be figuring out whether or not the port is opened or closed. So, pretty tricky exploit here. Apparently, only Outlook was actually implementing this part of the RFC that allowed you to download external certificates. Well, and that's it for today. So thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.